Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members. And get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy. Part two. Part two of what? Part two of the big interview with Emil Heskey. I hope you listened to part one, and if you did, there'll be questions at the end. If not, it's waiting for you right now. However, for those of you who enjoyed listening to Emil, what a character he is, what a nice man he is too. Here's the remainder of my chat with him. He's been promoting his brand new autobiography called Even Heskey Scored, which is out now, and I'll wager that what you're about to hear will revise your opinion of him, even if you love them as a footballer for Birmingham, Liverpool, Leicester, England. The bits about how he handled Anfield and what the Liverpool bubble did to him, well, they're gold.
Take us through the characters, because when I started talking about when we went down Leicester Tigers, and then you've lived through two gigantic eras of Leicester success, one in which you played, latterly post career, looking at something that people would classify as one of the great football stories. Your era, pick the ones you want, not maybe the ones I suggest, but I would contend that, like, I used to love watching Marshall when he went up front, mm-hmm. or socks rolled down, looking like Stig of the Dump.
He was.
But another phenomenon of our big interview will be, we were recently with Matt Janssen, mm-hmm. who had tough luck about what was a promising career being broken by a motorbike accident. But he would talk about Mark Hughes coming to training, having left Everton, and he actually goes into detail about how Mark Hughes was shit in training. Absolute rubbish. Mm-hmm. Saturday.
Yeah,
bang on.
We had players like that. Stevie Claridge. Stevie Claridge, if you watched him on the football pitch Monday to Friday, I would say, you'd think that he never played before. Stevie Claridge used to rock up. We used to come in at 10:30, just be ready for 10:30 on the pitch. That's what we used to be. The manager changed that to 10:15 in, to be on the pitch on the 10:30.
Ready at 10:30.
Yeah, because Steve Claridge used to rock up, pull his car right up next to the football pitch at 10:28, jump out with his boots and his fully kitted, jump on the pitch and go and train. And then after that, jump in his car and then he's off. That was his routine every day. And the manager changed it that you have to be in there 15 minutes, sometimes half an hour before the training session.
Even then, that's not a revolutionary change.
No, no.
You get him rocking up in a car, jumping out and then back in again. Right, well, we're introduced to 15-minute rule. That's not exactly
and then, like,
sports science.
He would, the thing with Steve Clough is the actual football part of things, you think, oh, he's never played before. The ball come to me. He just loved having a joke. Nothing was serious with him. He'd be pissing about all the time. But when the ball comes to him, he'd be jumping out the way like he doesn't want to touch it. You're like, what's wrong with him? And then the running he was great at, he'd be first around there and he'd be winning everything. And then come the Saturday game, amazing.
But that jump is hard for people to understand because most of us who wish we had your talent, his talent, you're like, well, yeah, okay. You might break rules about going out at night, you might do X and Y, but you train to make sure you're in the team, and if you're in the team, you're happy and you're earning your bonuses or whatever. But the correlation, and there are a series of players like this, I've been told about umpteen players who are like, game day, bang. Mm. How do people do that?
I don't know, it's a mentality that you have, because I couldn't do that, because I always said that I train the way I play. And I couldn't switch from that. I would always have to chase people down in training.
Let's say you'd had a bad week in training. Let's say you'd had a Claridge week in training. Would it come into the game?
It'd be on my mind. So I'd try and do certain things in training, make sure I'm on it. But obviously, not every week you are on it in training at times. One thing that Martin O'Neill never really did was he didn't really look at training and say, oh yeah, he's on it this week, I'm going to play him. Because he knew what characters brought certain stuff to the game and what they were going to do in the game. He always knew that.
See, he's really... I've met him, spoken to him about this. We've all watched his success. Mm-hmm. He's been a phenomenon. And the genealogy, although there's no blood relation, the genealogy is his ideas and his actions are not that different from Clough, under whom he played.
Yeah.
Do us the privilege of trying to explain Martin O'Neill as a manager or a football manager, because I don't think there's almost anybody left like him.
No.
Explain for the listener.
Martin was a man manager. If he liked you and he liked what you did, he'd make you feel like $1 million that you could take on the world. If he didn't like you, you'd probably best to leave the club. He always managed to get the best, in that era, always managed to get the best out of play. Just giving you the confidence to go out there and perform. Telling you, if he saw something good in you, he would say, go and do this. Oh, you were absolutely fantastic at that. Oh, look at this. Oh, and next minute you'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm going to run through a brick wall for this man. Blah, blah, I'm going to keep doing that. He wouldn't challenge you to do something that he knows that you can't do. I remember giving the ball away giving it to Robbie Savage and him giving the ball away. Mm-hmm. It might have been a bad pass, I don't know, but he'd given the ball away. And he goes, well, what's he going to do with the ball? Well, what he could do, he could turn out and pass. No, you can get it. You can turn. You can just run. No one's going to catch you. And I'm like, you're right, but... So he'd give you that confidence to say, okay, yeah. And that's all he told me to do. He'll get it, turn and run. Shoot. Get it, turn and run, cross. And it was just simplified. With Gups, for argument's sake. Gups, I need...
Steve Guppy.
Yeah, Steve Guppy. Take people on, cross it. You don't need to really beat them, because he was a winger as well. You don't need to beat them. Just get that crossing. Make sure you're on the end of it. So it gives you that confidence. And when you're actually doing it, be praising you. And that just gives you another lift, another boost. And that's all we...
It's a simple Pavlovian thing. You give people praise or reward them or get...
You get that's what you get back.
You're not describing something that's ultimately very complicated. So it functioned, but...
We never coached. We'd see him on Tuesday, he'd run us, because we had Wednesday off, and then Friday, and then Saturday, obviously, with the game.
Friday for the old v young, and then you'd play, and you ripped things up. You won League Cups and...
Four Wembley appearances in 5 years. Was it four? Yeah, four Wembley appearances in 5 years.
What was the most significant, or for you, most significant, most enjoyable of those? Because you... Apart from possibly having the most League Cups of anybody, you won or played in finals in Old Wembley, Cardiff, Hillsborough, if I'm not wrong.
Yes.
New Wembley?
Not new. I've played in New Wembley, not final.
No, because by the time you were winning with Liverpool, that's why I'm asking, because I can't quite figure.
I went to with Villa, but was that new or was that... Was that new or was it old? That was new, yeah.
Let's say, yeah. So you've played the final Old Wembley, New Wembley, Cardiff, Hillsborough. That ain't bad. Mm. The one that you maybe take the most satisfaction from, the one that you enjoy, the strangest, which of them to you
Middlesbrough.
Stands out?
Middlesbrough, the first one.
That's the Vibs.
Yes, I keep reminding him about that, actually. We got battered that the week or so before we got battered by them. I think it was 2 or 3 nil or something.
In the league.
Janino just absolutely battered us. So again, Martin thought about that, put Pontus Carmack on him to man mark him. Never did anything, and we drew that game. But that was my first cup final.
You scored, don't you?
Yeah. That was my first cup final.
25 yards top corner.
No. Yeah, something like that, tapping.
Let's just say, yeah. It counted, right?
Yeah, definitely.
It went in the net.
Yeah, it's cup final goal. that one was one to remember, that one. But it was a draw, and then obviously went to...
That's when you went to Hillsborough, isn't it?
Yeah, and then Stevie Clarice scored.
When you got a group of men like that winning a trophy, what is it, a bridge night out, or visit to a museum, or how do you... How do you celebrate?
I never got to the party at the end. So I was, how old would it be? I was 18.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Ready to celebrate it, I would have thought.
Yeah, but it was, the thing is, I'm not a drinker. And decided to have a pint of beer with everyone in the bar, because it was me and Stuart Campbell, who were the young lads at that time. Pint of beer. Finished that, got on the coach, and mind you, we just finished the game, so no one's eaten or anything like that.
You've sweated, you're drained.
Then a bottle of champagne, everyone brings a bottle of champagne, yeah, you start drinking the bottle of champagne, and that's all I can remember, to be honest. I can remember coming off the coach, that was it. My dad coming to collect me.
Did he kind of have an inkling that you might need a bit of shepherding?
Yeah.
Good man, Dad. I don't want to skip quickly away from the times that you scored the goals and you won the trophies, but I do think that, I'd be really interested, that although Liverpool was the one you grew up supporting, Leicester's in your heart, we've established, how did you live that Ranieri season? And as you began to watch, did your football eye tell you soon, not that they're going to be champions, but something interesting is happening here?
Definitely said something's interesting happening here. What did I think of Ranieri? I didn't really have too much thought, because... knowing he's a good manager and good tactician, I didn't know if it was going to work properly.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was going to work properly, because at the time, Leicester were just a workhorse team. They had a few players. You got your Mahrez and people like that who can give you a little bit special every now and again. But it was mainly like what we were, workhorse team, get in and amongst them, get Vardy up the top, get the balls behind, get him onto the back of them and score the goals. So I didn't know how it was going to work. And the good thing about what he did was he didn't change the structure too much straight away. And that's how I feel a lot of managers, they fail a little bit. You come in here and you want to change this, change that. Yeah, like, did you change it too much? Players are creatures of habit. So try and keep everything structured to a point and just change a little bit every now and again. So they don't even notice. If you come in and say, no, I'm changing this, oh, he's got to play now, he's got to do this. And we had it with Bolton. Bolton, a load of... So the youth development officer, the head of the youth, came and became the manager, and then he started putting all the youth lads in. I get what you're trying to do, but it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Not straight away. Maybe you put one in at right back. You're not going to put two centre-backs and then think that you're not going to concede goals. You've got to slowly make that. And I think that's one of the good things that he did. He just didn't implement too much changes straight away. And I think that just spiraled on. I think Pearson's, if you look up, he had a massive thing to do with them winning the league. But no one really wants to say that. But I think that was majority of his team and the style of play. Inevitably, you want a bit of a evolution, and they just weren't able to find it.
Did you go to any of the games?
I went to. I was actually commentating that at I think we did the Newcastle game or something like that, and I went to a couple of the games. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. The thing was, you look at that season, and I always said December, January would be the most important time. And it always is with people's seasons because it's the time where you get so many games crammed into one.
If a cut comes along, the pitches are different.
You're playing every 3 days.
Yeah.
And this thing about playing every 3 days, everyone knows that you don't really recover. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why they actually have games every 3 days. But if you want quality...
If you want better football...
If you want quality...
Let the body and the mind recover. Because it's now scientifically proven that you need X many hours...
They did the tests. Everyone's done the tests. So they give you all that information. Then tell you, yeah, we need you to play every 3 days. You play on Saturday and I need you to play again on Monday. But you know I'm not recovered.
So it's kind of like... let's push them to limits and see who'll come through. Let's admit that there'll be injuries and errors, and rather than have...
Well, that's why they have bigger squads now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the smaller clubs don't have that privilege of having bigger squads where you can actually say, OK, well, you 11 are going to play. And then we'll say, OK, how do you feel? OK, you sit out there and then I'll put him in there.
Which is why you knew that was the first big hurdle that Leicester side had to come through.
Yeah.
That a Christmas January period.
And everyone else faltered and they were the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing is you had Chelsea really bad that season. The only real challenge was Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else had kind of, I don't know what happened.
And possibly they were also proof of your theory that they physically floundered in that last six weeks.
They were doing what they generally do. You know, they nearly there, but it's just that last little hurdle you've got to get over.
Whether it's talent or whatever, it becomes part of your mentality.
It's a long season. You know, they play so many games. I remember the season I played with Liverpool. I think it was 60 something games we played. I think I played 61 or 59 games in one season.
Mm-hmm.
I remember. I think we played Saturday, Tuesday, Friday, Sunday or Thursday. So it was like 4 or 5 games in 1 week.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, you were asked to change a little bit because you mentioned Vardy, and I'm really interested from a personal point of view, mm-hmm. not speculation now. You know, he likes very much the ball over the top mm-hmm. into a channel. If his Leicester could catch the other team giving the ball away in a certain position, you send him away. He's at his happiest. He's most likely to score, not simply because he's breaking and the number of people he's against has gone down. Mentally, that's when he's at his mm-hmm. happiest. He's now going to play in a Brendan Rodgers team, which is play a different brand of football, where he's going to be supplied from higher up the pitch. Let's say whether it's Madison, whoever, but positionally they're going to be different. They're probably going to play less on the break. They want to dominate the ball. He's going to be increasingly asked, mm-hmm. has been since February when Rodgers took over, to play differently. Mm-hmm. You had to adapt, didn't you? From what had made you successful at Leicester, you had to show different. I don't know. At Liverpool, you had to positionally, it was different, you were given the ball differently.
Well, we went from, no disrespect to Leicester, we went from a more of a counter-attacking team, holding the ball up and chasing the channels, and to actually having more of the ball. We probably had 30% of the ball at Leicester to 60% of the ball at Liverpool. How do you break someone down? We went from having two banks of four at Leicester, and then us two working up there.
Us two being you and
whoever, whoever it is, and sitting back and soaking up pressure, then hitting on the break, and then two, basically the other way around, where people are sitting in front of you and you've got to try and create space. You've got to have plenty of movement.
Were you mentally prepared for that before you moved? Were you like, I know this is going to be completely different?
Well, I was lucky I played with the national team. Mm-hmm. So, different style of football. And then my football brain was...
engaged, it was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I could pick up on certain things fairly quickly and I could learn it and adapt quite quickly. And I adapted fairly quickly for that change that we had.
So there was an emotional thing about going to Liverpool. Listen, it's a bigger club. You probably felt you had even more chance of winning trophies, which proved to be
true.
Yeah,
of course.
The John Barnes thing. Mm-hmm. In your youth, Liverpool had been a club that you'd supported. You probably look at it as being a brilliant move for you in terms of just about everything. Is that correct?
Yeah. It was the right move. I had options. Villa. Doug Ellis was onto me through Peter Taylor. To come and even just have a discussion. But once I knew Liverpool were involved, it was a case of, well, what's the point in speaking to anyone else? It was just, yeah. I think Spurs were interested, but I don't know if there was any real interest. I think they were just sniffing around.
And one of the characters that has, again, featured in our series that I like very much indeed, I want to pick on, is the arrival of Gary McAllister. is a big positive for you.
Huge.
In every way. Carragher was in this as well, and he went that, about 6 weeks before they signed Gary, Julio was briefing the team saying, I think he must have been playing Coventry maybe. McAllister's finished, slowest playing team, get on him. And then 6 weeks later, he's like, why would you sign Gary McAllister? But I think you can understand.
I don't understand why this. That's just a mental thing for us.
Explain, yeah. Gary.
Gary was just a great individual to be around. You say that his legs had gone, they hadn't. Maybe sharpness to get there for 10 yards, but up and down, he was as good as anyone else. And his football brain was amazing. And so having him around as a senior figure, because you got to remember, I went from being at Leicester with all senior figures. So they would look after you, tell you, oh, yeah, well done, blah, blah, this and that, take you under your wing, as in on the football pitch. So going from there and then going to Liverpool where you hadn't... we've got Sammy Appiah and players like that, but we haven't really got a senior figure. We had a lot of younger lads. So going to there and having him there was amazing. You know, he was just great. Just a wonderful.
People underestimate what a fantastic passer of the ball he was.
Yeah.
In the Even Heskey Scored book, you talk about service from Beckham and service from Guppy, service from Scholes. But Gary's in that, at least in that class.
There's a lot of them are in that class as well, but not a lot of people don't talk about. There's so many players. You remember I played with Gary Parker.
Yeah. I know the regard you've got. I've watched him play. Also, I'm at Villa.
Yeah,
that be right?
I wasn't at Villa with him. No, but he played at Villa. Yeah, yeah.
And you could see his class. And I think Martin kept Gary as part of his coaching team. But I mean, if you want to explain to people who, because not everybody was of the age to have seen Gary.
No. Gary McAllister
or Parks too. Yeah. You said there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And you made a big statement there about Gary Parker that he's in that company mentioning.
Yeah, he is, 100% he is. And you look at Macca. These are players, and it's funny because I even spoke about it later on in the book when I moved from Liverpool to Birmingham. That was a tough transition because I'm so used to them players. Then you go to a different calibre of player, still a professional player, still a good player, but they don't see a pass. They don't see that pass. They can't make that pass.
Is that brutally frustrating?
Very, but you adapt very quickly. I can adapt. So I had to adapt very quickly. I'm used to getting a little eye contact with Stevie G and spinning and going and him going and playing it. Scholes. Danny Murphy. Players like that, you know, the ability to actually find a pass. Then having, no disrespect to them at Birmingham, but then having them just going side to side, keeping it simple, going backwards. And then it going longer. mm-hmm. and then playing from there.
Would you have intervened at that stage and said to some of the Birmingham players, like, do this, think about this?
Can they do it? That's the thing. So I just left them to do and let me adapt around it. Because if you get to 26, 27, 28, and you're not doing it then...
It isn't there.
No.
You explain in the book mm-hmm. that you when you began to experience coming back to Liverpool, that you were a little bit overcome by flipping it. They actually appreciate and love me there.
The thing is, when you're in an environment and per se, and you don't really know what you got there, the thing is, I would say, is keep away from newspapers because mm-hmm. they will give you a false
Sorry about that.
Image on certain things. Get to know your fans. Because it's now I get to understand how much they love me. But
You weren't aware.
I wasn't aware. I did feel like that, but I wasn't fully aware or fully a grasp of how much.
It's a great adulation, and it can be dangerous for people's egos, but it's a fabulous feeling, or I imagine it's a great feeling to be appreciated by a bank of men and women who are singing about you.
It must 100%. And even now, when I go around Liverpool and that, oh, yeah, great, thank you for what you did. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fine. But I didn't realise how much it was appreciated me, what I did.
It's nice to get in people's hearts.
Oh, yeah.
It's still in the book, and maybe you can explain it before we finish on something about the title. Mm-hmm. In essence, I didn't want to leave Liverpool, but I needed to leave them. If I'd stayed, I don't know if I'd been the same person. Mm-hmm. I was scrutinised for the clothes I wear, what I did, how my hair and stubble was, whether I had an earring or not, it goes. You actually say that if you'd stayed at Liverpool, life would have been drained for me from the pressure. My mood would have been different. Mm-hmm. It affected my lifestyle, my health, everything. The way I can begin to think about understanding that is I lucky to live through a really successful year at Barcelona, which is the city I live in. I watched Xavi and Puyol and whoever, Iniesta, Casillas at Real Madrid. And when I meet them to interview them now, one of them's tucked away in Oporto, one of them's in Qatar. Carlos Puyol has been out and basically doesn't answer his phone. Valdes has disappeared. And they all say, we desperately needed the pressure to go away. We took it and won and coped with it until we were 35, 36. And now it'll take about 2, 3, 4 years to depressurise. Is that akin to what you're talking about, the needing to get out of that Anfield?
I think when I went to Liverpool, I think I was sponsored by someone, I can't remember. I think it might have been Nike. Excuse me if it wasn't. Apologise.
It's done.
Anyway,
fine.
I was sponsored by someone, and you got to remember, I was 22, I'd not left Leicester. Leicester is where I'm from, grow up, that's where all my people are, everything. I come up to this place, I'd know nothing about moving clubs. No one had told me that. When you actually go and you're presented as a new player, you should wear in a suit and a tie and this. And
that. I think I can help you here. Did you turn up in Puma?
There you go.
Teamwork, you see?
There you go. So, sorry, Puma.
No. We've done it. Well, they get an extra mention.
There you go. So I've turned up with that. I'm sponsored by them. So I've turned up in that, and it was a big hoo-ha about why is he not wearing a suit? Why isn't he? Okay, fair enough.
Good deal.
Oh, look at his earring. Why is he? But so then that just goes on. If you're not doing so well, it just amplifies. So at the time, I still had a year left at Liverpool, and I wasn't ready to leave. Really, came to me. I think it was Rick Parry came to me and said they bought Cisse. They've accepted a deal from Birmingham. Go and talk to them. I said, like, really want to go. I was speaking to my agent, and I don't really want to go. I'd fight for my place. But they said, no, he's going to play. You're not going to play. Okay, that's fine. I'll go and have a look at what Burnley was like. Went, met with Steve Bruce. It was back in the Midlands. So I took it up. But it was a good thing because it allowed me to just come out of that cauldron, that pressure cooker, into something that was a little bit less... it was still pressure because it's football, you want to win games, but it's nowhere near what that is. That is tough. You've got to be mentally, physically and mentally ready for that because it will drain you.
And now, as if by magic, it's time for the Bet365 question. Our sponsors at the world's favourite online betting company, wanted to know more about one game in particular. England's famous 5-1 victory over Germany in Munich's Olympic Stadium in 2001, during which Emil scored his country's fifth goal.
We must let you go, but we must finish on the reason for the title of the book, because anybody who watched England going to Germany, England had such a psychosis about Germany. Whatever Lineker's expression about 90 minutes, 11 men, then Germany win, blah, blah, blah. When Old Wembley was closed by Didier Mann scoring that.
And that was the pressure we're going into the game with. Then you end up 1-0 down. Should have been 2-0 down. That is tough.
But none of you looked as if you were thinking, oh, well, here we go again.
No.
And that, even as a Scot, that was a beautiful football performance.
Yeah, we had some good players. We at times, we gelled so well. And it just looked, everything just clicked and everyone knew.
Brilliant, your eyes are shining now looking back at it. You're mentally in that, in the Olympic Stadium.
You know everything just gels, everything just clicks. And you've got, look at our defensive pair of Rio and Sol. Can you name me two better?
It's elite, isn't it?
Yeah.
Complementary, smart, athletic, footballing. We've been taught over this series, don't know Sol, don't know people talking about more. People, particularly Manchester United colleagues, have said, you need to understand differently about Rio's competitiveness, about his leadership qualities. You know, Vida got the armband, I think, at United, and everybody who's talked to us in this series about that said, probably should have been Rio. So leader, elegant, tall, athletic. Yeah. It's a brilliant pairing.
Yeah.
A brilliant pairing. Well, and in front of them?
We had Scholes, I think it was Scholes and Stevie G, Bex, and Nicky Barmby. We had the best left-back in of an era. Ashley Cole.
Ashley was different. It probably still is different class, but phenomenal footballer, phenomenal athlete.
And then myself and Michael up front,
which was a proper partnership. Do you remember the build-up? Do you remember thinking we'll win here? Do you remember when it's nearly 0-0? Maybe speaking personally or what leaders in the team say.
I always went into games just it's another game. Can they stop me?
Nice. Nice.
I always went into games like that, and I think that went off a bit off Martin O'Neill, because we never really focused. It wasn't until I went to Liverpool that we really focused on opposition, England as well, obviously. But when I was at Leicester, we never really focused on opposition as such. It's only that time when we went to the League Cup final when we got battered before. You thought, okay, let me put him on.
Close down Janinho,
and then everyone else can do what they're doing. But so I never really focused on that sort of stuff, and but there's a bit, obviously there's a big hoo ha when it comes to playing Germany all the time. We lost the last game at the old Wembley, which is a massive, huge thing. Then you go into their backyard and you're 1-0 down, but we had the characters, we had the leaders, and everyone led by example as well. We didn't just have one obviously Bex was the captain, but it wasn't just Bex who was leading. We had 11 on there. 11 leaders on that pitch, and that was the good thing about England at that time. Especially like now, you're always waiting for someone else to do something. When I watch England, I'm always waiting for someone else to do something. I'm always looking, oh, why didn't he go and take that by the ball by his horns? Oh, he's waiting for him to do something. Then he's waiting for him to do something. Someone's got to do something. And in that team, we always had someone to do. Even like you're saying, Ashley, I always say Ashley Cole is the best left back of that era.
And listen, maybe we need a second interview, but again, this bugs me the way that he was written about, that he was treated, and it's been transferred to Raheem now.
Yeah.
It's reached a stage where, you know, it's intolerable.
It's not even down to what people wear. What's it got to do with anyone? What you're wearing now, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I know, look rubbish. I know I look rubbish. Listen, you're allowed to say it, mate. It's okay.
It doesn't bother me. It's your... So I can't.
If I want to dress like this, it's okay. I know. I have no explanation, unless we come back to the theme that we began upon, that inherently it's about, well, let's just pick on the guy who's different from us.
Different. And I think that's the
yeah. Do you feel that similarly about how Ashley was treated?
I think so, yeah. I just think you look at, this is another episode really, but if you look at the trophies he's won, but he's never been given the accolades that others who have probably not as won as much as him.
I tell you,
they're saying it's for achievements within sports. Uh-huh. He's won them. He's won more than anyone else.
Well, I remember meeting him down at Chelsea's training ground and interviewing him one day, and it was in one of those sort of inflatable training ground things but when it rains, it drums and you can't interview. So we sat there, thank the Lord. talking on our own,
mm-hmm.
him and Torres, for about half an hour because we can't do the TV interview. Brilliant, yeah. It's one, because one of the things, this few things we've got to complain about is like, we need to meet you guys so that the first time that we talk isn't doing this or mm-hmm. after a game or looking for a headline. We, oh, this has been nice. I like you. Or, okay, you're not too bad. And Ashley was eloquent, articulate, interesting, funny. It was just a joy. And I'm like, well, you're nothing like you're portrayed. Nothing. And then you look at his football achievements and the way that he changed Chelsea, kept himself in shape. And all that happened was one person once said, he's greedy, and therefore it just mushrooms like what, that, what out
is,
of order.
What is greed, though?
It was an unjustifiable criticism. Maybe the incident about swerving off the thing, maladroitly written.
We're all in the job. Now, if someone else dangles a carrot of a bigger job, who's gonna? What are we all going to do?
What would each of us do? Largely, we would do what each footballer, each
we're employees, does. That's what they are, so they're going to go to thing.
I hope that people are convinced that they should go out and find and buy. Even Heskey scored. I'm also pretty convinced that it should have said, Emil Heskey, just give me the ball.
Yeah, that might be the back page.
Emil Heskey, can you cope with me? You've coped with us brilliantly.
Thank
You've been
you
generous
much.
With your time. It's been a joy. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thanks for having
Emil,
me.
Emil, legend.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Backpage. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.